I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast for an independent publishing company that explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor of Kate, and today I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Daniel Wilcox. Hi, guys.
And today we are talking about comics, Kickstarter, small press, Comic-Cons, what to do if you're a writer and you want to get a comic book off the ground. And we're also going to be talking about ghosts. We're joined by comic book writer, publisher, and the BAFTA-nominated filmmaker, Joey Oliveira. How's it going, man?
Hi, guys. I'm good, thanks. It's going good, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no worries. So, what have you guys been up to? What have you been making? Dan, I know you've been... you've just done... Can you talk about that yet, or is that...
No.
well, we'll cut that. Okay, cool.
Really be into that bit.
Okay. Joey, what have you been working on, dude?
So I've just finished a Kickstarter for issue 2 of Ghost Island. I've just come off the back of that, and I'm just putting everything into just the artwork's finished for that now. So I'm actually doing the lettering for this issue. So okay. I'm actually working on that at the moment. I'm just getting that, try and get that finished for London Super Comic Con in August.
Are you all done, finished with your last campaign, the first campaign?
Sorry?
Have you all like fulfilled and got all your rewards out and stuff for the first one then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was back in January.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. It took us a while to get ours out, so I think we only just managed to get them out, finished all of the fulfillment last week. But it feels good to have it all done.
I've got my copy now. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it looks perfect.
That's cool.
Surreal, man. Holding your own comic.
Yeah.
So Dan, what have you been doing that you can talk about?
So I've wrapped up a novella, which I'm not allowed to say too much about yet, but should be coming out at some point later this year, which is quite exciting. And I've also been putting together or looking at the plans for our next series, which is the project name for it is. Are we saying the project name?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah,
we've said it before. Yeah, Trollpocalypse. So it's basically going to be another post-apocalyptic series, but a little bit different to They Rot, just a bit of a different style, just to have a bit of play.
And they have trolls.
Yeah, and we're also looking at the actual launch now of Lazarus, which was for long-term listeners to Pete, the second half of the books that we originally started co-writing together when we started doing our sort of cross path publishing stuff. But yeah, so I'm really excited to see that coming together. And just getting it out there, because we've been working on that for nearly a year now.
Yeah, it's good though. I'm happy with it. It's come together quite nicely. And that kind of leads into your big whoop, right, for this week?
Yeah, shall I just jump straight into it?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so my big whoop this week is that we are running a 99 Designs competition for the book cover for Lazarus. And we've never used 99 Designs before, but we've heard a lot about it for other podcasts. And it's one of those things that I was a bit dubious about to start with, but also quite excited, because for people that don't know, it's an online marketplace where you put up your brief, you put what you're looking for from, it could be a logo, a book cover, a magazine cover, anything artsy. And it just has a pool of designers that will jump in and give you ideas. Or their versions of designs. And then what you do is slowly, as time goes by, you eliminate them down into your finalists, get them to tweak the designs, and then you pay the winner. But if you don't like any designs, you don't really have to pay and put people forward. So it's kind of a, there's no downside to doing it. And we had some fantastic entries come in, and we've narrowed it down to three, but I think we know which one we're going with now.
Yeah, that seems to be the one that's been picked the most. It's got the most 5-star ratings anyway. So that'd be cool. So Joey, have you got a big whoop for us?
My big whoop. I'm going to say the movie War of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, apparently it's good. Chris Stuckman's like a big YouTube reviewer that I watch a lot of. He gave it an A+, I think.
Did he? Yeah.
That's rare.
I haven't even seen it yet, but it's still my big whoop.
Well, apparently it's going to be great. I think you're going to like it.
I'm on the hype train for.
Yeah. Well, the first two were great. In fact, I don't think I even watched it. I think I'd watched the second one in passing, but the first one I really like, absolutely loved, and really got into it.
It gets better, you know. It's one of the most consistent franchises, I think, that's going right now.
You think it's like overlooked, because it's one of the things that I don't really hear people talk about until they actually come out.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, there's a lot of blockbusters coming out at the moment as well. There's Dunkirk coming out the week after it as well, so that doesn't necessarily help.
Like Baby Driver, Spider-Man: Homecoming, Dunkirk. Yeah, there's so many films at the minute I really want to see.
To be honest, I forgot War of the Planet of the Apes was a thing. I remember seeing the trailer. I agree with you, Luke. Like, I've seen the first one. I've not actually seen the second one myself. But the first one I remember being a fantastic film when I first watched it. But it's like, you enjoy it, and then it's just, you don't think about it anymore.
The CGI is incredible as well. It's like, you forget they're not real apes. You know?
Yeah. It's still Andy Serkis.
He's put so much into it. You can tell he's very passionate about it, and I love that about it.
I volunteered at the London Screenwriters Festival a few years ago, and their offices was opposite Andy Serkis's, what it's called now, like Imagination Studios or Imaginarium Studios.
Imaginarium, I think, yeah.
But I kept looking in the windows to try and see someone, but I didn't see anything interesting.
Have you been inside?
No, because the office I was in was like a normal, boring office.
Yeah, I've got a friend who knows a person that works there, and apparently in the lobby they've just got a massive, like, 20-foot Gollum statue.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, I'd get that just for myself. If I owned an office, I'd just get a 20-foot statue of myself.
Of yourself? Okay.
Just of myself.
Yeah.
Maybe holding a pet caterpillar.
Yeah. So...
quick silence aside, what's your big one?
I just had to check my notes. That's what I was just checking my notes. Okay, I got here the Almavo ships, and I'm just sort of really happy to have that out. I think when you sort of do a Kickstarter campaign, it's always like the worry that you're going to fluff it up. Like, you're going to like do so, like, you're not going to have enough money, you're not going to ask for enough, or you're not going to make enough, or you've not counted shipping, posting right. And because it was the first one, I was just terrified that I was going to get down to shipping and the maths just weren't going to work. But it actually came, I think, like, we actually made £10 profit out of it all. Like, so we managed to get it just down to the wire. So I'm quite happy with it. But, I mean, we never really went into it to make a profit initially, just to sort of get something off the ground. I don't know about you, Joe. Did you try and make a profit from yours, or is it like a...
No. Make a profit more like get in debt kind of thing from the first one. Yeah. The first one, like you were saying about shipping, I had not calculated that at all, and that really nearly put me to bed.
How did you go about it? Because I ended up with like quite a nice little system on the Royal Mail website, and batching it all. I felt really pro.
You done it the really proper way. I did it. Just turned up to the post office. Here's all 80 boxes. Take it. Yeah, I didn't do it that way.
Were many of them going abroad as well? Because I did that. I turned up because I was doing all the pre-packaging and pre-label printing and stuff, and I turned up with all the overseas stuff. And then I like handed him over, and he goes, "You know, you need to put the EU label, like the things you need to sign out, and put them on these." And I had to take them back. And that took me another 3 hours to just write out like loads and loads of these EU customs things. Yeah, it's terrible, but it's cool. I enjoyed it. I mean, so we'll get into the Kickstarter stuff later on. But I mean, do you want to give us a bit of an idea of who you are, what you do, how you got into this whole writing game, and go from there, really?
Okay, so I'm the writer of Ghost Island. It's a supernatural horror graphic novel series. I work full time. This is not my only thing that I do. This is like something I'm passionate about. That's what I work on, really. And I used to be a filmmaker. Oh, I still do a bit of short movie making stuff still. And yeah, I've just moved away from that and gone into comics in the last 15 months, I'd say.
So, I mean, so was film the thing that you, when you first started like making stuff, you were like, film's the thing I want to do. What sort of got you into film in the first place?
I got given a camera, like a tiniest camera. This is going back in 2003 now. And it was like smaller, smaller than half the size of a packet crisps or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
just a little box at my mom and stepdad got me for my 13th birthday. And on the weekends, I'd just go out and just shoot some silly videos and then come back and edit them together to some music. And then it just developed and snowballed into something. It's like, oh, I'll start writing a script for this and we'll go out and do like an action film on the streets of Liverpool or, you know, and I've done that for like the last 10 years from there and just went to festivals. And then that's how the BAFTA nomination came as well.
So what was the film that won the BAFTA?
So it was a film called Inhibitions.
Okay.
And I literally just, I wrote that, filmed it, directed it and acted in it. There was no one else involved. It was just me. So I was like, just setting the tripod up and doing my own thing. It's because not a lot of people were available to, you know, film all the time. So it's like, out of frustration, I was like, I'm just going to still do this, but on my own. And then I entered it into a film festival in Leicester Square that was held. And then we got shortlisted to the final three. And it was down to like a public vote. And people got to vote. And I came running up, but it was still cool to go down there and, you know.
That's cool.
That's a fantastic thing. Because it takes a lot of, I guess, self-motivation and confidence in your stuff to actually submit to a festival in the first place. I mean, had you acted in stuff before? Was that also like your first?
Yeah, that was my first gig as well. I was just like, no one else is going to do it, so I'll just bloody do it.
So,
you know.
I was just going to say, did you get any funding for that, or was that like just a purely zero budget?
Zero budget. I was 19, but you know. Not enough to make a little Hollywood action budget film. So it was just a small one. Yeah, it was just a little indie festival. So they took it in.
And what was it that caused the switch from filmmaking to comics? Because I know from a few people that generally they'll switch from things like film to something like writing short stories or novels, because you are then fully in control of what you're doing. And it seems to be, quote, an easier route. Obviously, it's not. But from what I understand, going from film, which is quite a tricky industry, to then going into comics, which is also quite a tricky industry. What was that kind of transition?
Going back to how I got into it, it was more out of the frustration, really. The filmmaking route was going to take a lot of... Well, I was working hard at it, but it was going to... I was either try and get some money together and get a real job, in quote, and try and do it on the side, but it just took over my life, the job. So I went into comics, really, and just, it was, like you said, it was quite a hard route, but it was quite easier for me because I storyboard a lot of my work. Like every shot in film, I storyboard everything that happens on the script is in my head, basically. Yeah. So I can quite easily write that down. And for comics, it's like a dream because I can describe what shot I want. I can, like, medium shot, wide shot. And I can, you know, just explain the shot to the artist, and hopefully they can read my English and translate that to the page. And I'd say it was quite a smooth transition into it, really.
Yeah, I think like visual storytelling, especially writing for visual storytelling, it's all very similar. I was reading Warren Ellis's newsletter, and he was talking about, so he's just done the Castlevania Netflix series for animation, and he was talking to the newsletter about how he's kind of been practicing for that for the last 20, 30 years because he's been writing comics all that time. It's the same it's the same idea, just writing for sort of visual medium. But, I mean, I'm quite similar to you because filmmaking was the thing I thought I was going to do. I was like, film is what I'm going to do. But I couldn't get any funding for one thing, and it just seemed to be impossible to get funding. And then I just kind of realized how expensive and how painful filmmaking is compared to just sitting at your computer and writing.
Or like it's a lazy man, Drew.
Yeah. The only film I did that did all right, I actually sort of worked out a way to do it from my bedroom, which is Keith. But I prefer doing comics and stories and like what we're doing now, Dan, like this is kind of the dream, really, just to, no matter where we are, we can jump on Skype, talk about a story, and then start writing a story down.
Yeah, just create.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you have any sort of like, when you got into comic book making, were you like, what was the point that made you go from, I quite fancy making a comic to, it's actually something possible. This is actually something that we can get together and get made.
It came from, I mean, the comic medium itself, I never even thought about it. It just came across through a friend suggested that I started reading the Walking Dead comics to catch up with the series kind of thing. And that just opened a world for me because I was thinking I'd only ever been exposed to superhero comics and that's all it's ever been for me, not something that could be potentially grounded in a, you know, comic book universe and maybe, you know, people can, it can be like real life stories basically you can tell on the page, can't it? It just came from that really. And
was it when you were doing your filmmaking, was the, because we read Ghost Island, or I've read volume one, and obviously it's a very, very dark story. Yes. Was that the kind of stuff that you were doing in filmmaking, or is the shift in medium also shifted your genre as well?
No, it's always been like horror, dark thriller, dark tale stories. I'm not like a rom-com guy or...
Who hurt you then as a child? What happened?
That's for another podcast, though.
Yeah, a personal one just for you.
Yeah.
That's cool then, man. I mean, is there any, so Robert Kirkman, I guess, and like the whole Image comic sort of scene, is there any sort of creators out there who like really inspired you in sort of the way you told the story? Like, I don't know, like Alan Moore, or, you know, is there any people like that that you really were inspired by?
I'd say again, like Walking Dead, that obviously opened the world to me, like a character driven story, you know, there's a lot of that in that. I read The Watchmen as well, maybe for some sort of style. But I am a bit of a comics noob. I've got a lot of catching up to do in the, you know, comics world, but I'm more concentrating on the indie scene and grabbing people's comics, and just like every time I see somebody on Kickstarter with a good idea on whether a comic or like a dark story, someone's like, yeah, just give me it, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
There's so many cool comics to do on Kickstarter, doing the whole small press thing though. But I do think you kind of get more interesting stuff on there than you do in definitely Marvel and DC, but like even like in Image and stuff like that, like some of the stuff that's coming out on Kickstarter is just kind of insane. I mean, do you regularly sort of go on Kickstarter and check what's going out, or do you? You do, okay.
Yeah, it's just like almost every other day, probably just like check the new tab and just see what's coming through, kind of thing. It's not only that; it's about seeing who else is out there, kind of networking as well. You know, we're in the UK or America. It's just like seeing these other creators, because it's not really an easy and open way to connect with other creators, other than probably Twitter, where, you know, you're following someone else's retweet, or it's not really a big network for it to find, if you get me.
Yeah. So were there any sort of like, what kind of lessons do you think that you sort of learned whilst filmmaking that you brought over to like the comic making process?
So as I said before about the storyboarding, I did a lot of that with the filmmaking, and that obviously helped a hell of a lot going into comics, because when you're trying to get your idea across the artist to draw what's in your head, that obviously helped a lot in trying to get the vision onto the page. And she's absolutely nailed it, I think, Annabella Tullioni, trying to get what I did have in my head onto the page. I do miss a lot. It was difficult leaving out the audio and music away from filmmaking, because I'm totally about somebody like immersing that person reading the comic. So, or watching a film, like the music or that, that plays a big part in my short films, the music and atmosphere of things. So I definitely miss that in the comic.
Because
there's quite a few pages where there's not many speech bubbles, and I think that's where maybe something I can tighten up on in future comics, because that's where probably the music would come in my script.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think kind of like with film, you control the pacing of the narrative. With comics, like it's kind of, I mean, you can like fill more text into the panels where you want people to slow down a bit. But there's not much more you can do than that, because people are going to read at whatever pace they want. I mean, some people don't even read the text. I'm sure they just sort of like flick through it, look at the pretty pictures.
Yeah, I'm sure my mate does some of that. Yeah. But what was the original idea behind Ghost Island? What was the seed that made that become your first Kickstarter project?
It was really from... I had a bit of a... Not a fail, just like a bit of a jump start with a previous comic idea called 2084, The New Order. And it was like a set in the UK, like a post-apocalyptic society, kind of 1984 cross beef of vendetta. All the UK's divided into states and walled up, like Trump style. I wrote this 4 years ago, so...
bit of That's
a
terrifying.
Nostradamus type thing. But yeah, when I went on to Ghost Island into from just like frustration from horror movies where like there's a bad guy in it or there's a serial killer in it and he's just bad because of it and you don't find out what makes this person evil. And that's where it came from for the idea for Ghost Island. All the ghosts that are on the island have got some kind of evil, dark past. And through the psychic of Josh, we go into that and go into their flashbacks of like their origins, you know, how they ended up in there. Why is the guy called the Butcher? Really just on the island. There's all these different evil characters housed on the island. So
yeah,
it was just, it went from what makes a person evil. That was like this simple question that spawned from it.
Yeah. Is it basically mostly about trying to tell the stories that haven't been told before and looking for that unique idea rather than, because I know a lot of people when they put ideas together, they'll tend to, I mean, me and Luke do it with some of our stories. We'll pick two ideas and merge them together because it's sometimes difficult to find that original bend, that original angle. Yeah. So is that kind of part of what you look for then? Or would you say that Ghost Island was inspired heavily by something that is already pre-existing?
I mean, I came to think of that afterwards, like after I'd finished it all, somebody said, oh, so it's Jurassic Park with ghosts. I was like, oh yeah. So maybe in my subconscious, that's Jurassic Park is like one of my favorite films. So maybe in the subconscious, in the back of my head, maybe that's where it came from, but it wasn't intentional.
Yeah. I promise.
Because I really did like, I loved the idea as you've got a lot of characters, especially in that first issue, it sets up really well with, you've got a lot of what I'd probably call dominant characters that have their own story that are all quite interesting and different, but it's not like so far out of everyone being completely polar opposite that it's jarring.
Yeah, well, I love the idea of having like these set amount of characters go into the island and we're all starting the journey with them kind of thing. And we know we've got some layers to peel back about them, but we know they're all new to this experience together and we're all going on it with them and we're going to find out things together and we're going to find out bits and pieces about them, which might throw things up in the air. So yeah, that's how I liked it as well.
Yeah.
So how many issues are you looking at doing?
So it's five issues. Obviously the first issue was 44 pages and they're going to continue to be quite long. The second one's 38 and we'll probably stick around the 40 page for the, and the final one probably be about 50, 60. So
yeah,
it's like a big finale of the,
Yeah.
So how long ago was it? So you were sitting down, you were like watching Jurassic Park, say, and then like how long ago was it when you first started to put pen to paper and started to like write out the ideas? And was it the characters who sort of came first, or was it like the idea of the theme park ghost sort of thing, or how did that whole process work?
So it started with the characters. I'd say it started with Josh, the main character, where he's like a troubled psychic, and his fiance's been, well, she's like missing and presumed dead by a lot of the press, and it was just following from that and what pushes him to find out more about, well, he can't remember anything, he's just completely blacked out from the experience, he doesn't know where she's gone, she doesn't know what happened to him, but her blood was found on her hands. So then we just spawned from that and threw them into Jurassic Park with ghosts.
I've got to say, the first 10 pages, I think it's about 10 pages, so were really great. I mean, so you made this comic and then you sort of hand it out there. Like, what did people react to like the Carroll murder. Right.
I've been to a few conventions and like I've got kids coming up to the table flicking through the first 10 pages like, whoa, stop right there. But yeah, I mean, the reaction and reviews have been fantastic. I mean, it's like I kind of wanted like a kind of bad review so I could like improve on, you know, improve on the process. But I've got my own critiques of myself to improve on. But again, the audience reaction's been fantastic. And
What's your sort of what's your selling strategy? Do you go to cons? Do you have like your website? What are the main channels that you use to sell the book, comic?
Conventions, yeah, definitely conventions at the moment. Like as soon as Kickstarter issue one finished, I was like, I'm going to try and get out there as much as possible now and try and build up like a fan base kind of thing, a following. And so I booked about 19-20 conventions for this year.
Wow. This year? Yeah. How many of them have you done so far?
Sorry, one. I'm just on the board. I've done 13
okay.
so far.
Yeah. So how conventions are something like I really want to do more of because I want to do some like in the real world sort of stuff.
It's nice to meet people and to interact, isn't it?
We've done one so far, and that was like just kind of lovely to sort of get out there. But at the same time, I'm kind of nervous because like. It's a lot of money. Like it would seem to all ask for like at least £50 or so to book a table, right? Is that
Where did you guys go?
We did the Lincoln.
Lincoln.
That was last October. It was in the Engine Shed, which is kind of a small venue, but they did well with the space. But we thought we'd start small just to iron out any sort of kinks we might have and just give it a bit of a practice run.
I think it was before you had the comic out and you were
So we didn't
We just had a few books.
We had a few books. Yeah,
the other stories as well, we had CDs of that.
Yeah. It was interesting. I mean, so did you factor in the cost of all these things, or did you sort of pay for yourself and think, I'll make money from one that will pay for the others, or how did that whole side of it work?
So I had a bit of money saved up from like I just like saved up money for the issue one Kickstarter and other just for the launch of it really. And yeah, the conventions just again put me into the black again, just booking up a load of conventions. And I wasn't going to expect to make profit over it, but hopefully break even, you know, from each one, because I've only got one book on the table, so it's not like you know, people are just going to buy one, you can't buy anything else. So I expanded on it a bit with some merchandise and stuff to bulk it up a bit, and people bought into that for now until more books come out. But the plan was always to either break even, hopefully I could maybe make some money back for travel costs, maybe a hotel or something like that. But
I think there's a good lesson there in, like you say, if you are limited and you do only have sort of one book, one comic, whatever it is, there are other avenues in putting out merchandise and looking for different ways to bulk up your stall a bit. So what were there any particular bits of merchandise that worked more than others? Was there anything that you thought would sort of sell like hotcakes that didn't?
So I'll go through what merchandise I've got. I've got badges. They go down really well with kids and stuff. But...
Not the comic itself, with the deaf. No, just take it away and hand them a badge. Just have a badge.
click the badge. I've got badges. I've got T-shirts now with the front cover skull on. They do quite well. What else I got? I got notebooks. They do the best. I love notebooks.
Notebooks?
People like notebooks, that's got the skull on again.
I see Luke's eyes lighting up then. Like, oh, okay.
I like notebooks as well. I've seen
dollar marks in your.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say the notebooks do the best. I've got like little art cards as well. People like them, you know, of the ghost characters.
Mm. You ever thought of doing a poster of your front cover?
Sorry, yeah, I've got posters as well.
Oh, yeah.
Did they sell that?
Not at all.
But we need some additional bits for our store.
I know people like bookmarks as well. I've never invested, but people like... You can have all your social media on there as well. You can fit that all on.
Yeah, so like, cons like the main thing for you at the minute, and sort of, is there any sort of more digital ways of like audience building you're looking at, or are you sort of strictly in the real world, shall we say, like in the physical world?
I'd love to say master the digital world, but no, not yet. I mean, I want to get the comics on, obviously Comixology.
Yeah.
Comic House is on there. Comics Central as well. That looks like a really buzzing website at the moment. They give you 90% of the profit, you know, of what you sell as well. But yeah, they're definitely just cons at the moment, and just trying to build up the fan base and just followers, really.
Yeah.
Do you often go and speak to other storeholders and try and like network? How important is that to sort of meet other comic makers for you?
Oh yeah, definitely. Just it keeps you sane more than anything, because you could be at a convention. I mean, I've had two or three really rough conventions where it's been called the Comic Con and I've been the only comic trader there. You know, it's quite really frustrating. And like, there was a last one that I was at in Southport, and there was another table. Like, it was just me and another table. I was like, I'm going to go over to keep myself sane and let's talk comics a bit.
Yeah.
But now it's great. Just, you know, any chance I can get away from the table and meet other creators and, you know, talk about what we do, you know, that it's something we're all passionate about. You know, it's great to talk about.
So for us, because we want to do some Comic Cons at some point, I think we've got one booked Nottingham Comic Con in October.
October 14th.
I'll be there too.
You know the table number,
Dan? I don't know, but we'll have to meet up for a drink after.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Nottingham's sort of like my home city as well, so it'd be nice to sort of go there and sort of see some people. So what sort of advice would you sort of give to us for like looking to book some comic? What should we avoid? Like, what should we be looking for on like the Comic Con website, and what they're providing? Like, what sort of, is £50 like a good sort of average to pay, or should we be looking for deals or pay?
deals. I'll give you a comic book and trade for the table.
Yeah.
So there's a website called comicconventions.co.uk. They have most of the conventions on there that predominantly sell comics.
Okay.
But, you know, there's only so many going on there. And then I've gone from outsourced from there, and there's been like, there's conventions everywhere basically, but they're not just comics, you know. It's, but some you can do well at, some you can't. And what I've tried to do is, like, say, what was the last one? Southport. I've tried to do like hashtag searches or Facebook searches of these conventions and try and look at pictures basically and see, is this busy? Is it, you know, what the footfall is like? Or, so I'll definitely go that route, but it's difficult. I mean, I booked on so many conventions because there's not many reviews of them, or just you don't know until you do them, you know? Yeah.
And it seems to be like more and more popping up, right? There seems to be new Comic-Cons every other week.
And the thing is with that, anybody can do them. You know, you or I could set up a Comic-Con and it could just be somebody, I don't want to piss on somebody, but they could just be doing it for the money. You know, you're getting all that, you talk about trader table money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money going into that event, and that person might not even care about comics or, you know, traders or anything like that. But they get the money at the end of the day, so it's not.
Yeah, we've had two set up in Lincoln in the past. There was the one that we went to last year, and then the year before that, there was another one run by a different company, a different venue. And it was pretty much just packing as many stalls into a tiny space as possible and just taking money on the door. And it was just, it wasn't convenient for the people going around or the storeholders. And the people that did it last year did a much better job. But I think, directly seeing some people that do just cram in for the cash and some people that actually care about the people that are there, I think it's important to do research where you can. Because, I mean, you said you're quite good friends with Frizz on Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, who are previous guests that have been on our show. For anyone that wants to listen to that episode, I think that was one of our earliest ones.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know that they've pretty much spent a year and a half going to different conventions. Have you used their mind at all to sort of just ask about different locations?
Yeah, well, we've bumped into each other a couple of times now, and I previously recommended them to a convention that turned out to be utter rubbish. So maybe they won't listen to me again.
Don't ask them for advice. They're going to send you to like a shed or something.
Well, is there a lesson there that the same Comic Con could be completely different on two different occasions?
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, this is my first year as well doing it. Mm. So the only advice I can probably give is, you've just got to go with the gut feeling, possibly with some of them. Maybe see if other creators are going to them. There was a really good one, I think, just went Cardiff.
I saw some stuff about that. It looks like it's fun. Yeah.
I think, someone's on the Awesome Comics podcast talking about how comics, you know, it was just all about the comics, basically. And you want to go to something like that. You want to be a part of something like that.
Yeah.
That's what I tried to do. I think you mentioned you've seen the vlog that I did once Magicon. I mean, I was going to do one for every Comic-Con and try and do a review for people to show what the good best one was like. But then the con started booking up like 18, 19. I was like, that's too many vlogs. I can't do it anymore.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So if we could just jump on back to the comic itself for a little minute or two. So a lot of people kind of asked me, they say they want to get into comics, or they've seen when we posted in our awful groups that we made this comic, and they were like, I want to do that as well. Where do I get an artist? And I don't really realize sort of how difficult it is to find an artist. I mean, how did you find, I'm going to mispronounce her name, Annabelle Terlione, is that right?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. She'll approve, I think.
Cool. How did you find her? And was this the first artist you found, or was it a bit of a trial and error process?
So I'll use the website called freelancer.com. Basically, it sounds a bit like that 99 Designs you previously mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
You post your project idea on there and all your requirements, what you want doing, and maybe your budget if you want. But then once it's posted, all the artists can then bid on the project for what they want to do your project for.
Okay.
So you get everyone into a nice bidding war with it.
Yeah.
Is it very X Factor? Is it like, because my cat died yesterday and I can't afford the funeral costs?
I mean, literal bids. You know, they bid the money.
Oh, okay.
They bid how much money. Yeah. No sob stories.
Oh, different. Yeah.
But yeah, it came across that way, and then you've got to filter through a lot of, like, you get silly bids. you get silly bids from like Eastern countries where they say like, oh, I'll do 25-page comic for $30. It's like, will you though?
Yeah.
I found Annabella through there. You know, she showed me a portfolio on there as well, and yeah, we just went on from there, and then we're 2 books done now, and we got a great partnership from that. I can't fault her.
That's cool.
And where's she from?
She's from Spain.
Okay.
So we've never met. We just message and stuff.
I love the digital world.
Yeah, it's cool. So in terms of you wrote the script. Did you write it sort of Marvel style or like full script? Marvel style, for people who don't know, is you kind of just like an overview of what happens, and then the artist draws, and then you script over top of what they draw. Did you go that method, or did you like the full script?
No, that's an interesting method I've heard of. Like, but it's maybe I'm too restrained, constrained with script, that everything's like scripted, everything's directed, the shots, everything. I mean, because I think maybe I've come from a filmmaking background, I know exactly what I want. So, I mean, Annabella's free to, if she wants to have some input, or, you know, oh, I think this will look better, and which she has done in this issue as well. Yeah. You know, I'm happy to, you know, work with that. Or, but I definitely from, I'm just, everything's on the script kind of thing there.
Cool. That's your baby.
Yeah. And you say someone else had the letters last time, but you're doing the lettering this time. Is that easy to do? I know it's a whole art in itself. Like, I just don't really know that much about lettering, the process, to be honest.
Neither do I, to be honest, but it's not. I don't have the budget anymore to do that. So I've been reading a load of comics, just looking at the lettering and doing some online courses, and hopefully it'll turn out, you know, okay.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have had a letterer on board, but it's just, I mean, it's not on the budget, and it's a new skill, you know, maybe I'll have at the end of the day.
Go on, Dad.
I was just going to say, so obviously you do a lot with all your comics and your filmmaking, you work full time. What does an average day look like for you?
A nightmare. So I'm like on three different shifts every week, so I don't have a routine at all. So it's like nights, late, early. So it's, I'm all over the place, really. It's just from when I get home.
What is your day job, by the way? Are you like a medium?
Ghost Island's based on me. It's actually a biography. Now I work in a car factory. I hate cars.
It's what people have to do, though, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, if you're trying to get into this kind of industry, there are hundreds of people, maybe some listening, that do have that job and are dreaming of creating these things. And obviously, the end goal is trying to. Well, for us, it's full time. I mean, is it for you?
I would love to, but I'm just plugging away, trying to just enjoy what I'm creating at the moment. You know what I mean? If you can enjoy that and have maybe the day job from hell, well, you've got to have balance, haven't you? I mean,
So are you just basically concentrating on Ghost Island now until you finish that all five issues, or do you think you'll maybe have a little jaunt off to like a one-shot issue of something else, or what's the plan there?
I'd love to do a one-shot issue, but it's my ideas are just too like big to get it on 25 pages or something. That's what happened with issue one. You know, I just like got carried away and got up to page 25 and they hadn't even got to the island yet. I was like, oh, bloody hell. I have to do 30 pages. So but I've got two other series planned of that 2084 I was telling you about, the before I started Ghost Island, that's being coloured at the moment, and that's bringing it to life a bit now. Okay. And I'm doing hopefully another Kickstarter in October for like a Canadian folklore horror themed graphic novel series.
I'm
really excited.
Is that gonna be like a similar sort of length as Ghost Island then?
Five issues, but I'm gonna be strict with myself and get it down to 25 pages.
Okay, cool.
I've got no more money. 25 pages.
How confident are you in your Kickstarters? Because you seem to be, that is your primary method for gathering funds and putting stuff out there. And obviously I know some people find that a bit tricky. And me personally, I've seen Luke and Ben put on their Kickstarter, and I've got a Kickstarter in the background that I'm looking at putting on when I have a bit of time to work on it. But it seems, I know for me, it feels like a gamble to put that as like your primary method of funding, but it seems to be working quite well for you.
Well, the first one, we made the goal. It was quite low. I went in low. I saved money up to most of the funds, but it was primarily to pay for the printing. So I went in low to try and get people on board to, you know, bite at this. That was my method. And from that, then second issue, I went for the full amount then. I mean, you know, I've got people in kind of thing, and hopefully you'll come back. And from the conventions that I'd done, like built up a bit of a following that way.
Yeah.
And so, like you say, with Kickstarter, it's free publicity as well. I mean, you're on there, it's a platform, and people can see it everywhere around the world.
It's the third biggest, Kickstarter's third biggest comic book publisher as well. Like, it's in terms of comic book output, it puts out think like 40% of the comics in the world. So there are people who go on Kickstarter looking for comics, like yourself, who go on like to looking for like cool comics as if it's his own publisher.
It's actually just me taking up all those sales.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an amazing platform. I mean, I don't know where I'd be without it. I mean, maybe I wouldn't have been able to do it, possibly.
Yeah.
And like many others. But yeah, I'm just grateful for the platform. And as you say, it is daunting on Kickstarter. I wouldn't say I'm confident with it at all. Because once you put it on there, I didn't know how it was going to go on the first day, on the second issue. But we got like 50 backers. I only got 60 backers on the first campaign. So, you know, I think it's about building yourself up, building that platform, and
I think it's a comfort zone thing as well, right? Like, Russell Nolte, who is a comic kind of guy in America, he did a $2,000 dollar campaign, then like $3,000 campaign, and then just this year in February he did a $20,000 campaign, and he made it, but like it just seems to be that comfort zone of just like slowly building yourself up to be comfortable with asking for that amount of money. Or obviously you have to do like a bigger project to warrant that, but it has made me a lot more comfortable now with doing another one, now that I know postage, and now I know I can work out exactly how much stuff is going to cost. I think I'll have a better idea of what we can actually do, but it's always going to be scary. It's always jumping off a cliff.
That first issue I had, and you talk about postage, I have to tell it, I had a nightmare with postage on the first issue.
I was just going to say, was it how much more expensive was it than you thought it was going to be?
Well, it was supposed to pay for that. That Kickstarter was just supposed to pay for the printing costs of the book, and I didn't realize Kickstarter takes 10% as well.
Yeah.
And so when I got to the post office, I wasn't left with much for the postage.
Yeah.
And the postage ended up costing, because I only charged like £2 for the. £3 for like abroad, like America,
right? Yeah,
anywhere else.
So that's less than the thing anyway, right? It's like £5 and upwards, I think.
I ended up costing about £7 to post abroad, and yeah. I had like 60 copies, and
ooh.
Yeah, killed me.
Yeah,
I need to do another Kickstarter immediately.
Yeah,
do you reckon anyone's ever done a Kickstarter to pay for the mistake from the first Kickstarter? Pay for my postage from my previous Kickstarter.
It was nearly me. So,
yeah.
So what would that be? If you were to give one piece of advice to someone who sat there wondering whether they should press the go live button on Kickstarter, would that be your first bit of advice, or is there something else you'd share?
Well, what's this other than the? Postage or
check your postage.
Yeah. So someone just sat there going, I don't know, what would be your one bit of advice for them?
Yeah, just try and account for everything that you need and not want, you know, in terms of money, because, you know, don't kill yourself over trying to, if you can't make the Kickstarter goal, then you're not, just don't break yourself because of it.
I
think people must also, if people like yourself are shopping on Kickstarter for comics, there must also be an expectation that you're going to be paying a little extra anyway for something that is independent. So I don't think people would mind too much if you did just knock up that price an extra pound or two just to cover your own costs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like a startup, isn't it? I mean, it's like a startup business for it.
Yeah. So just because I've only just done the performance, I still feel like I'm sort of in the mind for it. I would just tell people, if they're going to do it, just make some sample packages and just ship them out, and then you'll start to get an idea of how much stuff costs and how big and like what category things can go in. And I think it's just one of those things that you don't know until you've done it. Like, you just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. The first Kickstarter campaign, I learned so much, made so many mistakes, took some good points away from it, and then. I think the second one was better for it.
Yeah.
We almost tripled the back account as well. So
yeah, I think that's like the main aim, right? Just to get as many readers as you can get in there into the funnel.
Basically, just get the first one out of the way.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, do you see you're a filmmaker? Do you see Ghost Island sort of going transmedia? Maybe like doing a podcast series, or you know, like or a short film based around it, or anything like that. Or do you just see it just being comic book?
Well, the dream is to get the Netflix series deal. That is the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I could go.
Yeah, I could just so see it as a it would be perfect for it. Like each episode would go into like a ghost past, and you go into the origins of that, and you know, everyone, an episode back to the island and find out about more about the characters, and you know, dip in, dip out kind of thing. So that's the dream goal.
Yeah.
One of the stretch goals for the Ghost Island Kickstarter, if we got past the goal, would have been like an audio drama. So like I was saying before about the music, adding some music, and I wanted to add some like voice actors into it as well. And so you could follow the pages and, you know, while you're listening to these guys perform it with some sound effects. And just so I love like immersion and things, like, and just like the full experience for people to, you know, just absorb it all.
Yeah. What you should do, you should get like a sensory deprivation tank. Invite people around. Put them in there with a reading light and a comic.
Maybe the next Kickstarter campaign, that can be the top goal.
Yeah, the ultimate reading experience. You literally can't sense anything else. So I think we're pretty much there for like questions and stuff. Have you got a visit you wanted to ask then?
To ask you guys?
No. Oh,
sorry.
No, Dan, have you got any other questions?
I was going to say on the whole transmedia thing, like potentially, could you imagine Ghost Island as a VR?
A VR, that's a cool idea.
That could be fun.
Yeah, really cool.
But then, how does one do that? I know some game developers who do sort of VR stuff, but like they work on one tiny thing for about 5 years. Like, it seems a little bit, I don't know.
Did you see the Stranger Things VR?
No.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah,
that was fun. You're actually in the house and you can go around and look, and it's got like the lights on the wall lighting up, and then things are like going off behind you.
Yeah.
That next tip for your Comic-Con table, bring a VR headset and get yourself get something on there. Yeah. That'd have people queuing up for the table.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did have a question actually. So you got Kickstarter coming in October, and then there's like a cold, you got the 2084, and then you've got another series planned as well, right?
Yeah, that's called Whisper in the Woods.
That's the one, yeah. Okay, so what would you say like is the minimum product that you need to have for a pitch? Do you know what I mean? To go onto Kickstarter, because we went in with a cover and 5 pages, but I know some people have told us that that's probably not the best thing to do, is to have the whole issue ready anyway. But I don't know how you do that financially. I just want to get your thoughts on it, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfectly fine. I think what you said with the cover, and just, you've got to have some artwork. You know, you can't just say, have a long blog post saying what it's about. You know, you need to, people are visual, you know, they need to see what your ideas are. You know, but I'd say, you know, maybe 5-10 pages. I mean, I go further in kind of thing. So I've just got more artwork to share, you know, on social media and build up some buzz, you know. And like for the last campaign, I posted every single day for 2 months to try and, you know, build up the buzz. And I think definitely contributed to that opening day. But I'd say perfectly fine, just 5-10 pages, as many as you can, but don't bust your balls trying to.
Don't bust your balls. Quotation from Joey Oliveri. Okay.
That's going on the graves, though.
Okay, so I think that's pretty much it for now. We've got to hear what's next for Joey. Is there anything else other than the October campaign that you sort of want to talk about, or anything on the cards?
Well, I'm starting my own podcast.
Are you?
It's like a horror podcast.
Okay.
It's called Don't Go to Sleep. And basically, it's true accounts of like people's stories of. There's a subreddit called Let's Not Meet, and it's like these stories people post where they have creepy encounters with people.
Yeah.
And like sinister situations. And basically, what I'm doing is getting a bunch of voice actors to read out the stories and adding some music and some like sound effects, and just like I was saying before, complete horror audio experience.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to launch that within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
2 or 3 weeks. Okay, cool. Nice. If you want, if you ever want any advice on podcast stuff, we do. Yeah. Cool, man. So we've got like the quick fire round. Some people are always a little bit surprised, but as you listen to the show, you might have expected it coming. So are you ready, Dan?
Yes.
Do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
I'll shoot if you want.
Go for it.
Okay, your favourite member of the Beatles?
Lennon.
Would you rather live in a world where you're constantly bored or constantly bombarded with entertainment?
Bombarded with entertainment.
What's your favourite building?
The Liver Building.
Batman or Spider-Man?
Batman.
What was the last book or comic that you read?
Ooh. Oh, God. Smash the buzzer. Oh, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Comic, yeah. I don't. Sorry.
That's okay. The one person you'd want to meet?
Oh, bloody hell. Will Ferrell.
Nice. What's your biggest hobby outside of writing?
Making cars.
Crazy cars. Watching films.
Your favourite writer?
Oh, bloody hell. He's hard. George Orwell.
What was the worst birthday present you ever received?
Leather gloves.
And the last question, would you come back on the show? Maybe when you're doing the next campaign, or maybe when you maybe talk about some horror podcast stuff. That's always fun.
Yeah, I yeah. Sure, man.
Out of curiosity, what is the worst birthday present that you ever received, Dan?
It's a car sponge. So the mini story behind that is that my birthday is in March, and my nan basically bought me the sponge just after Christmas because it was on sale. It was like 50p in a garage. And I sold my car in January, but she gave it to me anyway, despite knowing that I sold my car, because she bought it before I sold my car.
It's an investment.
It was an investment.
You'll need to use it at some point.
Yeah, that sponge is now just in a frame on my wall to remind me of how much
I loved. Really? It's not really, is it? I really wish that was true.
It's in the bin.
My dad in the bin, straight in the bin. The worst thing I've ever seen, my dad got my mum for Christmas like a remote control for TV. And I remember thinking I was like five, and I was like, that is the worst present I've ever seen in my life.
That's an odd present. Did the previous TV not have a remote?
No, he just wanted a better. My dad wanted a better remote for the TV, and he bought it as a present for my mum.
Oh, and they hadn't brought out the Harry Potter wand remotes yet. Okay.
Yeah, not yet. No. Okay, cool. Jay, where can we follow you and your work?
I'm on Twitter, just Joey911. Ghost Island's on Facebook, Ghost Island Comic. We're on Instagram as well, Ghost Island Comic, and Twitter as well, The Ghost Island.
Also, go to Kickstarter and follow you there, because I follow you there, and I can see what you're backing.
All right. You just get emails every day then?
Yeah, I do, from everyone. I'm following a lot of people. Nice. Okay, so a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, patrons over at patreon.com, and thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, because without you I'd be alone. Thank you very much. And who we got on next? I don't know now. Maybe Monica? Monica Leonel? It's all jumbled up at the minute. So there will be another episode, and there will be people talking on it. So expect that to happen. Okay, all right, I'm going to sign off here.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.